Good evening, members. Welcome to the Audit Committee meeting. Just before we start, this will be Veronica Wilson's last audit meeting. She's leaving us to Pastures New, Tower Hamlet Homes, in case you wanted to ask. Right, a chairman's notices. They're all on the sheet on the back here. The meeting is being recorded and televised on CCTV. In the event of a fire, follow me. Health and safety, be aware that there are different levels in the chamber, so watch where you're going. Right, apologies for absence. Any more? Yes. I think you're right. Right, agenda item 3, to confirm the minutes of the audit committee held on the 18th of June. Agreed. Confirm the minutes of the special meeting of the audit committee held on the 12th of August.
Agreed.
Disclosure of interest. Disclose existence of and nature of any disclosable pecuniary interest, other pecuniary interest or non-pecuniary interest relating to items of business on the agenda having regards to paragraph 6A inclusive of the code of conduct for members. Okay? None? Right. Agenda item 6, review of the corporate risk register.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. Members will recall that at the last audit committee, you've approved a new 1516 corporate risk register, and this report provides a quarterly review of the register, which summarises the performance at quarter one. All of the scores are summarised in paragraph 1.2, and appendix 1 shows all the details. Happy to take any questions.
Councillor Hurd.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm sorry, I have a number of questions, I'm afraid. What I'd like to know, please, on page 1...
Is that page 1 of the report?
Page 1 of the report, yes.
Yeah.
It speaks about the various risks. And I note that over this and over the page that there are 5 unchanged items.
Yeah.
The first one that I want to talk about is the failure to adopt and implement the LDP. Now, I think this is out of our hands, and so therefore I don't think there's anything else that we could do, and which is why I'm surprised that the overall risk that exists and the fact that it's unchanged. It's no longer our LDP, it's somebody else's, and it's be up to them to sort the problems out. But I think we, as a council, have done all we can, and I would like to see, or I'd like to perhaps
still
discuss
remains,
whether that should be reduced.
Still
or
remains a corporate risk, whether it's out of our hands or not.
But nothing else we can do about it, no matter what we do.
Anyway.
Just wanted to add, we have received some news very recently, like today. We're still waiting for the feedback from DCLG. Now, we've heard that they're going to come back to us around the end of October. So obviously when this risk is going to be presented to the next audit committee, we'll then be able to give you a further update on that.
Okay. I mean, the question was, can the risk be lowered?
No.
Okay. The next one then is number 6, failure to effectively procure the new waste contract. I thought we would agree that at full council, and I wondered if that could be lowered.
Yeah, thanks for your question. The risk is got two elements. One is procurement. You're absolutely right that we reported to the last council meeting that the procurement process has more or less finished. We are still in this cooling off period, but the implementation obviously has not started, so the risk would remain.
Okay, but again, I ask, there's nothing else that this council can do. I mean, we've looked at the options, we've decided which options it would be, And again, I don't really think there's anything we could do, and that's why I would suggest that maybe
it's got an unlikely, but these things do have a nasty habit of coming back and biting you.
Okay. The next one I've got is over the page, number 12, failure to protect personal or commercially sensitive data. Again, this is another one that's unchanged. In the appendix, which I believe is on number 12, page 9 of 11.
Yep.
It speaks about, in the middle paragraph, third line, a member seminar was held in May. Now, I may have missed that, but the only meeting that I had, in my diary anyway, was talking about understanding the organisation. So, was that one I missed?
No. There was a separate IT sort of members training induction, which took place around the... at the end of May, which a number of members have attended, which included Councillor Thompson.
Ray Ware did it, didn't he?
He did.
And he spoke about not sending emails to private email addresses and changing your password every 2 months and various other basic things that nobody ever does.
Mm. They would be very pleased that you still remember those, so... I'll pass it on.
Okay, I'm sure I must have missed that. Thank you. And the next one is on 15, which speaks about lack of resilience or inability to recruit and retain staff. Mm-hmm. And the last couple of lines, it says that phase three of the review of the service review is being done, which will look at bringing more resilience in the service teams. What exactly is phase three, please?
So, obviously, phase one and two, you know, includes the implementation of the or recruitment of the managers, the group managers and the directors. So, phase three is now looking at the group managers level below. So, you know, we're not talking about sort of major changes. We're just simply talking about sort of minor changes in services. And obviously, planning is a slightly different. And we have gone out to, you know, recruit to build into a more sustainable planning service.
Okay, thank you. And I'm sorry to hold this, but my final point... actually speaks about first of all, I'll go to the beginning of the report, I'm sorry to shoot about. 1.1, this committee has a key role in providing independent assurance to the council on the adequacy of the risk management framework. That's the purpose of this report.
Yeah.
At the end on page 3, implications, impact on risk. Morden District Council is committed to the effective management of risk at every level within the council. If that is the case, then I really ask the question, why have those things remained unchanged if they've been identified as a risk? Still those things have remained unchanged. Are they being managed effectively, and is the council committed to the effective management?
Yeah, we do review the risk, the performance of risk every quarter at performance clinics, which is a new thing that we've introduced since the start of the year. So corporate leadership team, group managers and team leaders also attend those. And for those that are unchanged, we have reviewed the circumstances around the risk, and we have made decisions that it hasn't got any impact on the likelihood and the impact score. So it doesn't mean that we haven't reviewed them, but it's just that the fact that the scores have not changed.
Okay.
Well, just a supplementary then, Chairman. Really, just to say then that if these risks are remaining unchanged, it would be good to know what has been done since the previous review, so that because if they're not a risk, then they should come off. Yeah. And if there are greater risks, then perhaps we should have those highlighted, please.
Yeah. I mean, the Appendix 1 shows all the details about what officers have done since the last quarter.
In the comments.
Well, if I come back on that, Chairman, I'm not sure that it does. Because on a couple of these...
Where?
Sorry, I have my various notes on here. Again, things like... It spoke on 15, what is phase 3? It didn't say what phase 3 was. I don't think that they were explaining those. And also talking about on 13, on page 9, organisational core values are fundamental within the organisation. But if that is the case, if we're not focusing on those core values, what are we doing? So it's really stating a fact. We know that, but that's what the risk register is for. Yeah. And I didn't really feel that some of the comments were a particularly good update relating to why hasn't things changed? Why have the new risks been identified? So I just found that there was a number of questions it left unanswered.
Chairman, if I may. Just to confirm, sometimes effective risk management means that we're not actually taking action, that we accept the level of risk inherent in a situation as it is. An assessment is made by the leadership team as to the cost and benefits of any mitigating action, the overall impact of that action, and decisions are made on that basis. So sometimes you will see risks that are within, that are above the tolerance line for the council, but which there's no change in the risk scoring simply because it's not beneficial, if you like, to do any more than we're already doing. Does that help?
Okay then, thank you. Any more questions on the report? Yes.
Thank you, Chairman. Risk 5 in the detail, which is page 3 of the 11 in the Appendix 1, on this ownership of flooding responsibilities. I notice in the comment column that Anglian Water is there, Essex County Council is there, and developers, but no mention of the Environment Agency, who one would have thought had a role there, particularly after the production of their shoreline management plan.
That's a very good point, Councillor St. Joseph. We'll make sure that that is mentioned in the comments next time. Yeah, it should be included.
Any more questions? All right. So we've got a recommendation to, as a sort, as a, and we're happy that the corporate risk is being managed effectively. Thank you. Good. Agenda item 7. A progress against the 15-16 internal audit plan.
Thank you, Chairman. Okay, so this report is detailing the progress against the current year's plan, and Appendix 1 gives a summary of the audits that have been completed and the dates of reporting to this committee, and it also identifies the audits that are in progress or have not yet started. So three reports have been completed since the last report to the committee, and a summary of the findings of those reports is at Appendix 2. So you'll note that for two of the audits, a full assurance classification was given and no recommendations were made. For the third one, a substantial assurance classification was given, which is still good, and just the one recommendation in that report, and it's the medium priority recommendation. So there are also a number of audits currently in progress. They are identified in Appendix 1 and at paragraph 2.2.4.1. On page 2 of your report, it identifies the follow-up audits as detailed on the TEN system, where there are currently actions outstanding, and the corporate leadership team is monitoring progress in relation to those. And Chairman, I'm happy to take any questions.
Any questions on the internal audit report? Councillor Hurd.
Thank you for that. I've got a note actually on 2552 about an update by CLT. So they because those recommendations are currently outstanding, can I ask what they're actually doing to update that? Why are they noting them? Because at the moment they're outstanding.
CLT are proactively chasing the owners of those actions. What we've done is that we have, well, just before this meeting, I had a quick look at those outstanding actions. Majority of them have been completed, but it's just the fact that the person, the owner, has not gone into the system to update the progress.
Right.
So,
okay.
Which I will be, you know, going back with an email to say, why didn't you? Obviously, their focus have been on putting those actions in place rather than updating the system.
Right. Good.
Okay. Thank you for that. The other thing that I'd like to speak about is on Appendix 1, please.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I do note that poor Mrs. Mitchell there, with the lack of staff and the lack of support that does seem to be apparent in that department. I note that there are quite a few planned audits that are not started. Is that because they are not due yet, or because you haven't been able to start because of lack of staff, please?
Or both.
Okay, so in terms of when they're due, there's not a particular time scale allocated to these to start them, but obviously the audits I'm allocating as time becomes available within the team, and allocating on the basis of the highest priority audits first. So it is my expectation that not all of these audits will be completed by the year end at the current rate.
Thank you, Sharon. Can I come back on that then? Because by referring back to the previous item where we've got the risks identified, I've seen that there are things such as the governance and corporate change has not yet started, yet that was identified as a risk in the previous paper. The business continuity and disaster recover again was mentioned in risk 11. In fact, it was identified as a new risk, and yet that audit hasn't been started yet. And the same thing with risk management. There are 9 new risks from 16, and I hope that is something maybe that the CLT will take into account, that those risks are being identified and yet the risk management audit isn't actually being undertaken or hasn't been started yet. And the same thing with information management and data protection. Again, that's risk number 12, and the risk remains unchanged. But if we're not auditing that, we wouldn't necessarily know that.
Yeah.
So what I would ask is that if there is a progress, to refer back to those identified risks that we've got, to consider having the governance and corporate change, the business continuity and disaster recovery, the risk management and the information management, data and protection, because those are the ones that are previously identified.
So certainly they're higher up the list, so when the slot becomes available, we certainly do that. If I may, I'll just touch on some of the audits specifically that you mentioned. So the governance and corporate change, whilst the restructure had taken place, a number of the resulting changes were still in progress, and so it would have been clear to us at the time that had we gone in and audited at that point, we would have been identifying a lot that the corporate leadership team already knows. So things like resolving changes in reporting and in procedures and policies and things like that. So we know that the council needs to undertake an exercise to correct all of those to reflect the new structure. So I didn't feel that this was the best time, the most effective time to give assurance on that element. As regards business continuity and disaster recovery, I'm aware as a manager that there's been a significant push towards training and business continuity to all services developing business continuity plans and a series of tests on business continuity scheduled for the new year. So again, that's to a degree giving some assurance, so I think it's still worth a look, but maybe it's not as high priority as some of the areas that we've already started to audit.
Risk management.
Risk management. The audit is looking at getting assurance from the risk management process, and the fact that as an authority we are consistently reviewing our risk situation and identifying new risks is actually a positive, because we're keeping on top of it. If we weren't doing that, if we weren't refreshing it, then that would be more of a concern to me, because the focus of the audit is to get assurance from the effectiveness of the risk management processes.
And information management.
Okay, so the committee has received an update from the IT manager recently concerning information management, and I'm aware that as an authority we're subject to a very strict regime for compliance with government procedures. It used to be the Government Connect Code of Connection, it's PSN compliance, that's the one. So we are experiencing a deal of reviews in addition to what we're planning anyway. So hopefully
didn't we recently get some award or some recognition for our IT security systems?
We've received our PSN certificate for this year.
Yeah.
So, and we've also received an award, I think it's a gold award, for the...
Ray Ware is chairman of the...
GIS
system.
Right.
Sorry, I got there at the end.
Okie doke.
And I'm very pleased that that's the case. But I do note that it's still identified as a new risk, number 11 in agenda item number 6. It is still a risk.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Any more questions? We asked to note the report. Noted. Right. We're taking 8 and 9 together. And a presentation on the external audit report.
Statement of accounts. Veronica will do it.
Sorry?
Thank you, Chair. So hopefully will be a brief presentation outlining the requirements of the audit committee in relation to the sign-off of the statement of accounts, also discussing the external audit process, providing information about the asset valuation that was undertaken within the year, and also outlining key information from the core statements themselves. So as an audit committee, your role in relation to the statement of accounts is to review and to approve the statement by the 30th of September 2015, and for that purpose that's why the accounts have come this evening. The accounting policies themselves were presented to this committee in June and were approved at that point. Some of those policies in the final accounts have been omitted where they are either not relevant or are not of a material nature. The external auditors will also be presenting their findings to this committee following this presentation. So as external audit, they are asked to provide an opinion on the council's financial statements and also to report on the council's arrangements for securing economy, efficiency and effectiveness in its use of resources. We are expecting an unqualified opinion on our accounts, showing that the accounts give a true and fair view of the financial position of the council, and also that the council has put in place proper arrangements to secure economy, efficiency and effectiveness in relation to how it uses its resources. The external audit report itself will highlight four unadjusted audit differences set out in this table, and I apologise, it is quite a small text, so I'll just talk you through some of those areas, or I'll leave it to Mr. Barnes. The first unadjusted difference is in relation to an area that was picked up as part of last year's process in relation to a transitional protection payment that was put through the collection fund. This totaled £40,000, and this adjustment just reflects that within this account. Also, there's been adjustments or recommended adjustments in relation to us including a provision around man charges. At the moment, we had noted it in the accounts under a contingent liability and had a earmarked reserve, so funds set aside. In the view of the auditors, it was that there was more of a clear case and we had an estimated total around the valuation of that. And so they've recommended that a provision be put in place. Also, there are unadjusted differences in relation to the revaluation of some of our assets and also in relation to disposal as well. These unadjusted audit differences are immaterial of nature, and for this purpose we haven't adjusted the accounts on this instance. The asset valuation was undertaken this year by the District Valuer Services. It was a quinquennial valuation, which is happens 5 yearly, and this and this valuation was undertaken to give a value of our assets as at the 1st of April 2014. Moving forward, we are moving to more of a rolling valuation program, so we will be moving to value an a certain percentage of our assets each year rather than just having a 5 yearly valuation. An overview of the valuation has seen an increase in upward gain in relation to our assets of over £2 million. This was made up of shifts both up and down in relation to our buildings and land valuations, but overall saw the asset valuation increase. Moving on then to our core statements. The movement in reserves statement, or the MERS, shows the movement in the year of the different reserves held by the council. And this is broken down into usable reserves and unusable reserves. And usable reserves are those that can are cash-backed and can actually be utilised by the council in future years. The usable reserves that we hold are broken down into revenue, so it's a general fund or specific earmarked reserves, and also capital around the capital grants unapplied and capital receipts. A slight extract from our MERS statement shows that as at the 31st of March we had usable reserves totaling £11.9 million. Throughout the year this also saw transfers into and out of our earmarked reserves in relation to known projects or known situations that we wanted to set funds aside for to be utilised in future. These are outlined on the screen, and those of particular note is possibly the local development plan. So we've set aside funds in relation to future costs that we are likely to incur in relation to that process, and we've also set aside funds in relation to local council tax support and business rates, just to protect the council against any future costs in relation to those. The comprehensive income and expenditure statement is equivalent to a profit and loss of a normal company, and it shows the cost of the council providing its services. As can be seen on the extract of the expenditure and income statement, there are various headings in which our services are split into: central services, culture related, environmental, housing, planning and development, transport, and corporate democratic. Just to give you an overview of what might sit within those particular headings, just to make it a little bit clearer, because they're not necessarily that clear. Within central services to the public, we include expenditure and income in relation to our land charges, election management and registration, civil emergencies, council tax administration, and also the offsetting or income and expenditure in relation to our investment properties, our industrial sites, and other miscellaneous land and property. Within cultural related services, this includes expenditure and income in relation to tourism, our parks and open spaces, leisure centres, the river, and also heritage, so arts and museums, contributions that we make. Within environmental and regulatory services, we include environmental health, environmental waste, the waste contract, and costs go through there, and also including cemeteries, public toilets, and public entertainment licences and hackney carriages. The kind of biggest line overall for gross expenditure and income sits within housing services. This has quite a large number, but that's because within this line is where our housing benefit expense and also the subsidy that we're receiving from central government reports through this line. So that's why the numbers within there are quite large compared to the other elements. Planning and development services again covers planning, which is planning policy, LDP costs, building control, development control, so general planning application income, all goes through within there. Transport service line is where we report our off-street parking. So that's the income that we receive, particularly from the Malden Town Centre car parks, as well as the costs that we incur at any of our other car parks as well, in other areas within the district. So within the year, it was £8.5 million, the cost, net cost of our providing our services. When we then factor in other operating expenditure and financing and things like that, for the year we came to a total of a deficit of £1,000 for that year.
One thousand.
The balance sheet is just a snapshot as at the 31st of March 2015. It includes information about long-term and current assets, long-term and current liabilities, as well as the reserves that we hold as at the end of the year. So within our balance sheet, our long-term assets, so this includes kind of our property holdings, our land and buildings, other kind of equipment that we have, vehicles, comes to a total of £29.7 million. This follows, obviously, the impact of our revaluation that we had within the year. We also have current assets totaling nearly £15.5 million. This is broken into short-term investments, cash and cash equivalents, and available for sale. These are all investment functions. The available for sale was a new inclusion on our balance sheet this year, as we've used different instruments in relation to treasury management. At the end of the year, we had a value of just over £3 million that we had with those instruments. Overall, as I've said, net assets for the council stands at £15.7 million. Once we've also taken into consideration any money that we might have outstanding or owing to others. As already discussed or shown on the MERS, this funding is supported by £11.9 million of usable reserves, so those cashable revenue and capital reserves that we have funded, as well as £3.8 million of what is classed as uncashable reserves. So these are kind of statutory and accounting adjustment accounts that we hold. Quickly onto the cash flow statement. So this shows the cash flows throughout the council as at the 31st of March. It separates these into operating, council operations, also investing activities and financing decisions. As at the end of the year, the council had £5.5 million cash available to be utilised or held in what was classed as cash or cash equivalents, effectively, that could be easily transferred into cash. The collection fund is another core statement, and this demonstrates information in relation to business rates and council tax that the council collects as a billing authority on behalf of itself, but also Essex County Council, Essex Fire, Police and Crime Commissioner, Central Government in relation to business rates as well. At the end of the year, we had an overall surplus within that fund of just over £1 million. And this is then attributable to all of those different preceptors within that account. Just to the side, that Maldon District Council's share of that would be 217 deficit in relation to business rates, but 253,000 positive in relation to council tax surplus that we had there overall. The committee is asked to consider the external audit report to approve the audited statement of accounts and for this to be signed off by the chairman, and also to approve the letter of representation and this to be signed also. Thank you.
Councillor Hurd.
I think that the council, I think, is to be commended really for ending up in that position. I think it's it does show good management, and certainly as far as the report goes, it gives quite a reasonable picture, I think, as far as the council is concerned. The only, and I hate to pick up on something, but I just ask the question, on page 9, financial statements of appendix 1, it speaks about the council not compliant with its own policy on the creation and level of earmarked reserves. And I wondered if it could be explained to me the consequences, if any, because pages 15 and 16 are obviously saying, you know, that it's not a bad picture. But I just wonder what those non-compliances were, although I note overall I'm very pleased with what I've heard tonight.
Happy to answer that question. This is because the council sets itself a maximum level of its earmarked reserves, and it's not a requirement for you to do so, but nonetheless the council does do that. And then in this year you've found you've actually had a slightly better financial outcome than you were anticipating, and therefore you've quite prudently put money into your earmarked reserves. But what you've done in doing that is actually to exceed the maximum levels that you set for yourselves. So therefore it seems to us slightly strange that you would have a maximum level. There's no requirement for you to do so. And then if you are setting yourselves a maximum level, you're then not actually abiding by it in the production of the financial statements. So I think our recommendation is that you should reconsider really whether you should be having a maximum level for the reserves, and really should be focusing on a minimum level of reserves to make sure you've got the resources you need available.
Yeah, Lisa.
It all becomes crystal clear now.
Could I just add to that, though? One of the sort of flip side consideration to that is, obviously, if councils just build up reserves, they could come under criticism for not utilising resources by reinvesting in services or in, sort of the quality of services or new services. And if you're continually looking for efficiencies, then you need to balance the two things off. But I think that the point we're saying is, why, if you like, set yourself a rod for your own back, but you do need to be able to, if you take away a maximum, you do need to be able to demonstrate that you are actively considering, you know, where balances are building up without them being there being a planned use of those reserves. Yeah. You don't want them to be unreasonable in either way, really. But minimum levels of reserves is around that safety factor.
Could we go...
Sorry, can I just add to that as well? On page 30 of the appendix 1, that very, you know, that very point has been addressed by, and we have put in a management response to that. So effectively, when it comes to the 16-17 budget setting process, rather than setting a maximum, we'll be reviewing the whole process of whether there is a need to set a maximum at all. I'll be going to, you know, my, more inclined to setting a minimum, really.
Could we go back to the net asset slide, about three back? It said something about, yes, that's the one. On the halfway down, available for sale, 3 million. What are we selling, or?
This is a treasury management tool. So within the year, we started using something called certificate of deposits, which effectively we purchase through banks, and these are what are classed as available for sale instruments.
Oh, I see. Right.
Effectively, it's just another form of investment.
Right. Yeah. I got it. I thought we were flogging the leisure centre or something. Or the prom. Councillor Hurd.
Thank you, Chairman. Could we just also just go back to where the monies were divvied up, please, as well?
On the kitchen.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
Yeah.
And I can't quite see where that zero is. It says it's either Police and Crime Commissioner for Essex.
Yeah, that's in relation to business rates. As a billing authority, we collect all of the business rates and then pass them over. 50% goes to central government.
Yeah.
We retain 40%, 9% we pass on to county, and 1% to fire. The police are outside of that retention scheme.
Thank you very much.
Right. So, any more to add on 8 and 9?
Auditors probably want to say a few words.
Do you want to add to what's been said?
I could just take off since she's had a few things.
Not too much. We're going through your
report. I'll just pick out some highlights for you, if you like, Chair.
So we're on the
Appendix 1, yes. If we start on page 2, there just were some items that were outstanding at the point of drafting this report. I just wanted to update the committee on those and just basically to tell you that we have pretty much finished all of those items now, and therefore we'll be in a position to issue the audit report next week. The only other things I really wanted to highlight, I think Veronica's stolen some of my thunder, really, in terms of the misstatements and the
incorrect
misstatements. Just something to draw to your attention, really, was that as a result of the draft financial statements on page 6, we did actually implement a new significant risk to our audit because of the values for impairment that were included in the draft financial statements, because that wasn't really in line with our expectations. We, as has happened in total, we expected the asset value to increase given the sort of time lag since the last valuation and what's happened to the economy since. So we did implement this extra significant risk, but we have done work around that, and we are satisfied that there isn't any material error as a result of that. But nonetheless, we did identify a couple of issues which hadn't been correctly treated in the first instance. Right. Which are highlighted in the report there and were listed on the slide that Veronica showed and is in Appendix 2 to our report. And then the only other things really I'd probably like to highlight is the element on use of resources, starting on page 15. As Veronica said, the second part of our work is to give an opinion that you are do have proper arrangements in place to manage the use of your resources. And we focus on two elements with that, as she mentioned. The first element is financial resilience, so making sure the council's got appropriate resources in place and is properly managing the financial situation it finds itself in. So we've reviewed that. You've obviously got a medium-term financial strategy, which the finance team are regularly keeping updated and reporting back to members on the situation you're in. So we've looked at the assumptions underpinning that, and we're happy those are sensible assumptions that have been used. So overall, I think as Veronica's slide showed, you have got a reasonable amount of financial balances in hand, and action's been taken to sort of keep that to be the case. with the challenges that are forthcoming in terms of further funding reductions and extra demand on services. So we think the finance team and the members as well are kind of, they're open-minded and aware of that particular situation, and just need to keep pushing in terms of keeping on top of that and managing the position. And the second element of our use of resources work is in respect of challenging economy efficiency and effectiveness. And sort of over the last, in 14-15, you approved a new corporate plan, which set yourselves some new high-level outcomes and corporate activities and things you were going to focus on. So hopefully that will help now the senior management team is in place and settled. Hopefully they'll be able to focus on actually focusing on delivering those priorities and improving the services to meet the aspirations of the council. You did mention earlier one of the risks is in respect of the LDP. The planning service has been struggling in recent years, and you were quite close to breaching the government's threshold on the major planning applications last year. So I'm pleased to say this year that you've actually improved that quite significantly. So you've moved away from that threshold risk for the time being. So that's a better place to be. I think just something that we have just mentioned is that historically there's been quite a number of planning appeals that have been successfully appealed against the council, which has cost the council quite a bit of money. Again, this year, good news story is that the amount of costs have reduced in 14-15 compared to previous years. But now that you have had your examination in public of the LDP, whilst there are still issues to be resolved with it, most of the LDP was found to be suitable, and so that needs to be a major planning consideration that the planning committee takes into account when it's making decisions. Otherwise, now there's risks of further appeals going against you in respect of that. And then finally, really on page 20 and 21, we've just outlined some of the priorities from 14-15, and that demonstrates that some areas you've managed to improve your performance, but other areas there's been sort of a decline or you haven't met the targets you set for yourselves. So on balance, obviously there's still more work to be done, obviously, as there always is, but the issues that have arisen don't impact on our use of resources conclusion, so we're able to give an unqualified conclusion. That's all I really wanted to say, Chairman. Happy to take any questions from members.
Councillor Hurd.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Barnes. I think you spoke about the costs against the council have been reduced. Do we know if the number of referrals has also reduced, therefore making them less, or is that something that we don't know about, Chairman?
Yeah.
That information is available, but it's not on top of my head, I'm afraid. I believe, just from recollection of the analysis I looked at, that there has been a reduction in the appeals, but the reduction in costs is bigger than the reduction in the number of appeals. So,
Just to clarify on that, the reason that I asked that, you know, is it something that we are doing that is either reducing that? Is it because we've got enough staff now? So it's really just the reason why why that has gone down. Just really, I was looking for a reason for that.
I'm afraid I don't know the reason for that. I know it's something that people have been working hard on to make sure the decisions are right first time, and therefore there won't be successful appeals against those decisions.
There's been
a lot of pressure put on or encouragement of members to make those right decisions, and particularly to follow well-reasoned officer recommendations. But I haven't got the underlying reason for that, I'm afraid.
Any more questions?
On behalf of the finance team, I know that this is the final year of auditing the accounts. So on behalf of the council, we would like to thank both of you, Lisa and Andrew, for your hard work on this.
Thank you very much. But we do enjoy a good relationship with the finance team here, and I think we've reported previously and continue to report that actually it's just quite a well-oiled machine, and it gets better and better. So it's unfortunate that we're not going to be here going forward. We will be at one or two more audit committees, because we do still need to bring the annual audit letter here, which is the summary for public consumption of the audit results for the year, and also we need to complete your housing benefit specific grant claim work. So you'll have a grants report in the new year too. So we will be at one or two future audit committees, but thank you very much for that. Yeah. And we will pass that on to the rest of the team too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we're asked in on agenda item 8, we're asked to note appendix 1 and of the external audit report. And on agenda item 9, the statement of accounts to be approved and the letter of representation to be approved. Do I sign those now or afterwards?
Afterwards,
right. Is that agreed? Thank you. Right. Agenda item 10, external audit progress report. You're on again.
Thank you, Chair. There really is very little to say in this report. The key thing really to achieve is to sign off the accounts by the 30th of September, and we're on track to do that. The other piece of work that's ongoing at the moment is the audit of the housing and council tax benefits grant claim. The deadline for that is the 30th of November, and that work is well in train already. So that will definitely be completed within that deadline. So,
good, right. So we note that.
Sorry, Chairman, if I may, just to update the audit committee that since the last audit committee, we have issued the two outstanding audit certificates for 12, 13, and 13, 14, which I think you had, and I'm delighted that I'll be able to give the certificate this year at the same time as the opinions.
Clearing up the old work. Right. Agenda item 11, any other business? I haven't, there are none. To read out exclusion of the public and press, resolved that under section 100A, brackets 4 of the Local Government Act 1972, the public be excluded from the meeting for the following item of business on the grounds that it involves the likely disclosure of exempt information as defined in paragraph 1, 2 and 3 of part 1 of schedule 12A to the Act, and that this satisfies the public interest test. And the agenda item is internal audit review update. Agreed?